These are the PCORI methodology standards. This category is about standards for data networks as research facilitating structures. It was prepared by Dr. Hadi Karatsi from the Department of Health Policy and Management and Dr. Daniel Ford from the Department of Medicine. It will be presented by Dr. Karatsi.
Hello, this is Hadi Karatsi. In this module, I will be discussing the semantic interoperability issues and challenges that we have with data networks. This module, which talks about semantic interoperability, covers two subtopics of DN1 standard, and those are the data integration strategy and the standardized terminology encoding of data content standards. So, what is interoperability? Interoperability is the ability of systems or devices to exchange and use electronic health information from other systems or devices without any special effort on the part of the user. And this is the very important piece of it. So basically, a system can send information to the other system, and it's exactly the same as, for example, two doctors sending information to each other. So the next doctor knows exactly what the first doctor meant. However, computers are not that smart, and depending on a lot of different issues, the second computer or the receiver system may not actually understand what the sender meant. So there are different types of interoperability. You can definitely read through these, but basically there are three big categories. It's foundational, structural, or semantic. What I just described was the semantic one, making sure that the meaning is kept. Structural is just the structure of the information is kept the same, while foundational is just the coding of the elements or the words are kept the same. So, of course, it's always better to have semantic. And if you have semantic, that means you have structural. If you have structural, it means you already have foundational. Just giving you two examples is, so for example, for a structural interoperability, HL7 version 2, which I will talk later about it, will be sufficient for it. And that is what is happening out there in the real world right now. This is the common standard used. However, semantic interoperability is not that common out there right now. And that is, for example, the HL7 version 3, because it has referencing information model or RIM that keeps the meaning of a bunch of data elements that you try to send from one system to another. Here is a good table that talks about the semantic interoperability levels. So let's say in the first column, you have the maturity level of the interoperability going from low to medium and high. And of course, right now, we can do the low. In the near future, we can certainly do the medium interoperability, and we hope to be able to achieve the high interoperability maturity levels in the future. So what are the semantic interoperability examples in each of these? So the low, for example, as I told you, would be a structural interoperability, and you know that would be HL7 version 2. We will see that later. Medium is HL7 version 3, and that's the semantic interoperability I was talking about. But this is a semantic interoperability that it's hard-coded and it's somber, so RIM is actually a framework. It would be nice in future to create dynamic data models where, you know, the entire referencing model will happen on the fly. And that's what actually, as humans, sometimes we do. So that would be the highest level of semantic interoperability. And you can see there are some technical challenges for each of these levels or variations in process if we want to adopt them. There are a good number of locally or nationally funded efforts that are trying to create coding systems, models, you name it, standards, to make sure that they can achieve semantic or syntactic. Syntactic is the structural interoperability. And recently, ONC, the Office of National Coordinator, has made a huge effort on consolidating a lot of these efforts, and they have been successful to some extent, and hence the number of data networks out there is increasing. Just a reminder that if you want to achieve a meaningful interoperability level for your data network, you need to have semantic interoperability in addition to syntactic interoperability. Remember from the previous modules that I talked about different mandates that the government introduced through the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, including mandates for value-based care delivery, such as the accountable care organizations or the patient-centered medical homes. So within those structures, you need to be able to share data across multiple entities that are involved in the health care of the individual patient. So the individual patient, you know, may have, their own data storage. Just think about all of these gadgets out there that generate data to, you know, sending data to claims to the insurance company, going to a lab, going to an imaging center, ending up in a long-term care facility, going to their primary care physician, or going to an inpatient setting like a hospital. So these are all different levels of entities that may interact with a patient. Here in this image, you can see I've tried to come up with a big sort of a house that represents the accountable care organization. On the top is sort of the brain of an ACO that needs to be able to understand the entire population of their patients in order to be able to reduce the cost and improve the health of their entire population. And then as you go down, the different shapes shows the different types of data sources from the different categories of healthcare providers, like inpatient providers, EHR systems, outpatient providers, EHR systems, the customized health IT systems for long-term care facilities like skilled nursing facilities, and so on, to the bottom sort of row in that house where you can see the patient is generating data themselves. So the problem is we need semantic interoperability to be able to connect all of these data sources. So the ACO sort of, let's call it brain or cloud on the top, will be able to mine the data and understand what's needed to do. This is exactly the same thing that will happen in research. So if your research happens to do comparative effectiveness research, then that effect, that intervention that you're looking to compare may happen in each of these levels. And in order to have these data inside your larger data network, you need to spend a lot of time integrating it. And this is just one ACO. Just think about this ACO now trying to talk to another ACO or another set of providers. There are certain data integration strategies, and in order for equivalent data elements to come from different data sources and to be harmonized, meaning treated as equivalent, you need to make sure that there are some transformations happening to it. Here on the image on the right side, not only when you try to put all of your data sources in a semantic sort of data collection mechanism where, you know, everybody is collecting it in the same way, like just very simple, like everybody uses the same unit for a lab test. When you try to create your data network, let's say this is a centralized data network, you're actually bringing in all of the data into one big database, you have to go through some semantic transformations either before you merge them or after you want to get the data out of your data network and try to analyze it. So at the bottom of this image, you can see like smaller little data marts that you may create to use any of these statistical packages to look at the data and mine it. If you don't do the semantic transformation, you will end up introducing bias, error, and other type of issues in your analytical outputs. The first issue when you create a data network and you want to have interoperability is to link the data. And to link the data, you need to make sure that the patients match. And there are a lot of ways that you can look at patient matching and data linkage. Basically, you have to have ways to identify the patients and then try to find some attributes about the patient that you can use to make sure that this patient from this data source is exactly the same patient in the other data source. And there are certain criteria, certain certifications that may help you in that regard. Again, I'm trying not to cover the algorithmic approaches on how data linkage or patient matching happens, but make sure that you cover these mechanisms if you are trying to propose your own data network. There are certain certifications for EHRs through the Meaningful Use Program or other health IT systems that may help you to have the minimal data set that you may need to do patient matching, like FNHIE, for example, the Health Information Exchange, that always brings in data from other places to be able to exchange it. This is sort of like a data network, but that's for operational purposes. They always need to create something called a Master Patient Index. And a Master Patient Index needs at least certain information about the patient to make sure that the same patient has shown up, you know, in data source 1 versus data source X. If you like to learn more about patient matching mechanisms, I've provided a link here to ONC's websites, the Office of National Coordinator, where you can find more information. So when you have a data network, you also need to make sure that you have data about your data, and that is metadata. For example, you need to know who has provided this column in the database, who has collected this, how that was collected, when that was collected, and so on, because this is all important. There are certain things that, depending on certain situations, you may deal with that data in a different way. So metadata is basically like words in a dictionary. It sort of provides you information about another piece of data. When the data comes, for example, you know who has created it, who has collected it, who has saved it. Like, that would be something called provenance of the data. One way to look at metadata and one way to categorize it is administrative metadata, descriptive, and structural, which each of these means certain categories of the metadata that you need to collect. If you want to achieve semantic interoperability, you need to have some mechanisms that your data sources would be able to annotate metadata when they collect the data in the first place. For example, the ADAM, which I will discuss later, Common Data Model, requires that the metadata annotation being applied to data variables, values, data sets, and even the data analysis results. So just think about all of the different stages that the data may go through. This common data model needs metadata to be attached to the data through all of these stages. Here is also a list of other core semantics that metadata can capture, like what are the definitions, the standardized concepts, IDs, who are the owners, what is the data element lifecycle, does it have an expiry date on it, when it was created, when it was revised, what are the different versions of this, and so on. And this is a very labor-intensive process, because usually metadata is generated by humans. What is the best metadata, for example, for a patient identity? Remember, this is also important for patient matching process. Here is a guideline developed by the Department of Health and Human Services, where you need to collect at least the name, date of birth, address, zip code, or at least one or two of the other patient identifiers in order to be able to have enough metadata for patient matching, for example. Here are some of the examples. So if you have seen any computer programs, sometimes before a value is put in place, you see some metadata about it. So for example, here, this value has a birth time associated with it, or effective time of this value. So you know whatever will come back after this, what is the birth time of that value. Provenance of metadata is also very important on how it's generated, timestamps, actors, and so on. I remind you that through the Meaningful Use Program that incentivizes providers to adopt EHRs, in the stage 2 of it, which is actually right now in progress, the Office of National Coordinator has included certain metadata that needs to be recorded by EHRs or the staff who would actually collect the data in EHRs. And then we hope that this additional metadata that will be collected will help us in creating a higher semantic interoperability in the research data networks that we will create later on. Of course, a big piece of semantic interoperability on the structural side is that you need to have a certain system of coding or terminologies for what you record. let's say if we have a diagnosis, we want to make sure that I use the same name as the other doctor uses it. So we all refer to the same diagnosis. So there are codes for diagnosis, for procedures, for medications, for lab tests, you name it. There are so many coding systems out there. And I'm not trying to go through the details of these. This is not within the scope of the standard. You just need to know that there are standards. So when you propose a data network, you have to say, depending on the data, of course, you're collecting, what are the different terminology or coding systems that you want to use? Here is the first one, the International Classification of Diseases, ICD. That was published way back in 1893. And you can see some samples here, and it's all for diagnosis. So if you have a diagnosis, there is a digit for it. The most detailed diagnosis on the left panel, you can see it has like three digits and maybe two decimals. And by that, you can find any diagnosis you want. ICD-9 is the most widely used one. Of course, ICD-10 will become the de facto standard fairly soon, and most of the providers are migrating. That is even more comprehensive than ICD-9 and has encoded almost everything you can think of. Here is another coding system. It's the Diagnosis Related Group, or DRG. This is actually not a new system. It's basically a system on top of another system like ICD codes. The DRG is used to group up certain ICD codes and make them more relevant for certain operations out there. Here's an example. You can see on the image that they have sort of more larger categorizations of diagnosis. And of course, the coding systems are not all about diagnosis. Here is a coding system used for procedures. It's CPT, or the current procedural terminology, which is developed by the American Medical Association in order to be used for billing purposes. So if you go to a physician, the physician uses CPT codes in order to be reimbursed by the payer. And you can see in this image some examples of the CPT codes. Note that although most of the coding systems out there are free and you can download them, some of them are just too big to download, some of them are not free, and CPT is one of them, and it's copyrighted by AMA. SNOMED is another coding system that it's used for diagnosis as well as any other observations. It stands for the Systematized Nomenclature of Medicine. It was developed by the College of American Pathologists, and it has a multi-axial system. So that means you can even mix and match, combine certain of the codings in it, and come up even with new codings. So it is sort of endless in terms of how many things you can create. Sometimes you can even create concepts that don't have a meaning. So these are more advanced methods. Another category of the coding systems is something called LOINC. The Logical Observations, Identifiers, Names, and Codes. Used to be only laboratory, but they changed it to logical because now they include any types of observations, anything that has a test result, not necessarily lab tests. So for example, if all of the data sources that are feeding in your data network are using the same LOINC code, then you can easily run an average on all of these test results and know exactly what the value is. But if they don't use LOINC, then every test result may actually be calibrated or being measured based on something different. And this is very important to know. Here on this slide are some of the examples of the LOINC codes. And of course, we have codings for medications. The two widely used ones are the National Drug Codes, or NDC, or the RX norms that are developed by National Library of Medicine. In the European countries, they also use other classification systems like the Anatomical Therapeutic Chemical Classification, or ATC. NDCs are usually used for reimbursement purposes, so it has the information of how big the package of the medication was, while RX norm is very much clinical, and it's all about the ingredient of what is in it. There are also crosswalks between RxNorm, NDC, and even ATC. So even if one of your data sources is using NDC, the other one RxNorm, there are ways to some extent that you can match them. And here's an example of some of the RxNorm values for a certain medication. And we also have something called UMLS, which is the Unified Medical Language System developed by the National Library of Medicine, or NLM. And it is not really a coding system. It is mostly a method thesaurus that is a crosswalk between a good number of coding systems. This is available and you can download it. It actually crosswalks, for example, ICDs with other things, other diagnostic coding systems, and so on. This is often maintained by NLM, and it's a good source to be able to find the differences or the similarities between codings from different data sources, but it is just too convoluted and sometimes hard to work with. Data standards are not always for coding, and sometimes there are also standards for data exchange. So when you want to send and receive data, you have to make sure nothing happens to the data in between, and also you send it within a structure that the receiving end understands it. Remember the structural and semantic interoperability and the fact that I was talking about something called HL7. This is the most widely used standard here in the US for the clinical data exchange, or should I say health information exchange. And the name comes from a certain computer model for exchanging data in general, which has seven layers. And this protocol called HL7 runs on the seventh layer. That's why it's called HL7. So HL7, of course, went through the years through different versions. And version 2.x, there were multiple decimal versions. That version is the most widely used one, and frankly, it looks like what you see in this image. You can see it has a very special way of writing a message, and this is how an EHR, for example, electronic health record, can send your information to your data network. And there are some programs that can generate this or read this. Of course, this version, the 2.x, is not that interoperable because it doesn't say who has collected it, how it was collected, and so on. So the semantic interoperability is not that evident in it. However, version 3 does include semantic interoperability, and it is very complex, and the way it looks is like this. So this is version 3, where we have tags, and each of the tags can talk about the value that value actually is bringing to your network. HL7 version 3 has multiple formats. One format of it is the Consolidated Clinical Data Architecture, or CCDA. So you can create a data network for your research, and those hospitals or those physicians or those long-term care facilities can send you CCDA results. And they're hopefully would be semantically interoperable. Here, for example, in this code, which I'm not expecting you to read it, you can also find that not only it has a structure on how to send and receive the code, and not only has metadata, but also has the coding systems in it. So Loinc and SNOMED were used in this message. There are, of course, other data exchange standards like DICOM, or Digital Imaging and Communications in Medicine, which is for images, or other ones which I will let you to explore more. If you want to find more information about the standards themselves or the organizations or collaborations that are happening out there, I've provided some links here, including the link to the HL7 organization or other organizations who are developing these standards for healthcare. Here are also three main reports that were published by either the Office of National Coordinator or HIMSS, which is sort of the industry side of health information sciences, in defining interoperability, creating a roadmap for interoperability, or how to bring in data from individual patients as well, which is called the JSON report. So I highly recommend you to read at least the summaries of these reports, because they show where the future will go in terms of interoperability.